David Tirita. He's been an ecologist, spiritual explorer, space scientist for decades. His new ebook, Differentials and Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe, Making Waves with Multiple PhDs, and, well, he turns the pages on many subjects such as sacred geometry, zero-point energy, hidden harmonic codes of the universe, the answer to anti-gravity, and how to make extraterrestrial communication possible. In his laboratory, David Tirita is conducting actual experiments on zero-point energy, merging ancient stone technology with modern science. Here he is, full program on Coast to Coast. David, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Good, George. Good to hear your voice.
I think last time you were with me, Christmas Eve, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it's been a little while.
Always a magical time of the year, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it really is.
It's hard to believe, too. We're rolling through March into April. It's in a few more weeks. Where is the time going, David?
I know. I actually said to my wife the other day, can we just slow March down? It just seems like it's all happening so fast, and time is so precious.
I'm going back to St. Louis Sunday for a little bit to see my kids and do the programs out of the cave there.
Oh, that's great.
You know, my friends start calling me here when they know I'm on my way back. And I've got a dear friend of mine who's almost like a second mother. She's 74 years old. And, you know, I've been telling her, hey, I'm on the way back. And every Sunday I'll take her to brunch at a certain place that we go to in St. Louis. And she's just been a wonderful person. And she said, do you know you've known me for 10 years, you know, because she was my wife's friend. And, you know, and after we split up, you know, we stayed friends. And when she said that, it almost as if I got hit by a brick. 10 years in an event in one's life, and it seems like yesterday. And that's what's so scary, David. Time just keeps ticking by.
Well, you know, one thing I think about in terms of death and dying is this voice, this moment, the qualities of being human. It's like a flower. It's only going to happen once exactly with all of those qualities. And when we die, I mean, I'm fully convinced that we go on. I've seen the evidence. But this particular moment and this moment on Earth, on this planet, is never going to happen again. And that just baffles me, you know, to no end.
You know, and that's why, because it is so quick, that you need to live every day as if it's your last. And you really need to have fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I you know, I feel kind of the same way about my research, because I know I'm 47 years old, and most of the great scientists in history and even explorers in many different fields, they kind of peaked in their 40s in their capacity, and then they just kind of maintain, you know, most of their major discoveries from that point on. So I'm really in a very active stage of research.
And you have fun doing what you do, don't you?
Oh, I love it. Like, I wake up in the middle of the night. In fact, you know, this thing has happened recently about, you know, my discovery on differentials has been evolving for years, and I finally believe that I've done so much homework, and I presented my ebook to so many multiple PhDs, and it's creating so many waves out there of excitement. It's so much fun for me because I'm seeing the process of discovery and shared presence, and also with other researchers of mine, and we see that every time we turn another page, I mean, huge epiphanies and new discoveries occur. And I feel like, you know, consciousness is accelerating so much, and thanks to, you know, radio shows like yours and communicating with the world, ideas are accelerating so quickly that if we don't destroy ourselves, we literally could become an interstellar civilization.
I think so, too. Tell me about the lab.
Well, firstly, you know, in the lab itself, I mean, I had done something that even my partners had no idea what I was up to, but I knew about the hidden harmonic codes of the universe, and I remember one of my favorite experiments of Nikola Tesla's was that he tuned into a particular harmonic in the Earth itself, and he had his lab set up in Colorado Springs, and he was tied into the entire grid of the entire state of Colorado. And he said that in this particular harmonic, he actually tapped into a wave of energy that when it harmonized and came flooding into his lab and into the state, he shorted out all the transformers in the entire state of Colorado, and he was actually kicked out of the state of Colorado. So with that, I knew that these codes existed. I knew these harmonics existed, And I found out mathematically where they are, George. I mean, virtually everywhere. Something, if we think of the evolution of the way electricity has evolved, we went from just creating huge bursts or amplitude of electricity, and then we went to frequencies of energy thanks to the Tesla coil, and that led to the birth of radio and cell phones and television, broadcasting on particular frequencies. But what I've discovered, the way the universe is really working, is there's something beyond a frequency concept, and there are actual precise harmonic codes, which are multiple frequencies working in tandem together, kind of like a symphony, in precise dimensions of energy and ratios that produce something that is utterly miraculous. And it can lead to anything from anti-gravity to infinite energy, like what happened to Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, will revolutionize our understanding of music and communicating it over huge distances in the universe. And I've actually found out how to build a small harmonic set of wave generators that I mathematically calculated. And what I was doing was actually charging a concept of merging ancient technology with modern technology, and essentially it's stone technology. And we'll actually see how this ties into the Great Pyramids. And I know about your recent show on the History Channel. I haven't seen it yet because I don't have television, but I know this is going to be very, very exciting for your viewers. But essentially, stones, what I discovered was that they serve an actual purpose in essence in technology. Certain stones have what's called capacitance, meaning they have the capacity to hold an electrical charge. And that is because certain stones have a quality of crystalline structure, but also Casimiri kind of metal plates in them, little flakelets of metal.
And you know what? I would not have believed it. I talked to Shelley Carr some time ago, and she's going to be on tomorrow night, ironically enough, talking about stones, David. You're absolutely right. Stones, what you think are, you know, just sitting there, inanimate objects, they have the ability to do just about all kinds of things with sound, harmonics, you name it.
Well, because of these little micro plates of metal, and you know, John Hutchison was very instrumental in educating me about this process, I found that, you know, firstly, I did measurements on the electricity of the human body just using a simple voltage meter in the millivolt setting on our fingertips, thumb and index finger. You can see, you know, I've tested hundreds and hundreds of people at the Laughlin UFO Congress, and you see people that have like MS or nervous system disorders or depression or any kind of challenging illness. They have very low current in their body. Some of them are not even 1/100th of a volt, not even that. And then people who are very healthy can be as much as a third of a volt or 30 hundredths of a volt. And so what I did is I realized that, you know, certain types of stone, and we really lost touch with this from wearing rubber shoes and disconnecting with the earth, but when you touch them, because they have a little bit of charge from actual electromagnetism and capturing that electromagnetism from the sun, it raises our current a little, just a little bit. So I found a way to program stones, little stone pendants, with harmonic code generators and actually get the code to stay there in
Amazing.
The stone.
Amazing work, David.
And what's that?
Amazing work.
It's amazing. And when people touch them just for 2 minutes and then let them go, a person, for example, with MS who had 0.7 of 1/100th of a volt went to 5 full millivolts, which is phenomenal. And they're not even plugged into the thing anymore. And we did this hundreds and hundreds of times. So the question is, you know, this is just a small-scale experiment because I'm going to tell you something really, really outrageous. But essentially, it was like, where is all this extra energy coming from? You know, why is the human body, when it touches these what I call quantum jewelry pendants, why is the body moving more electrical conductivity and the energy flow is getting better? And I'm not electrocuting people. I mean, the energy levels are very, very safe.
And I trust you.
Super athletes try to get up to 200 millivolts, so I haven't had anybody get that high except for my wife, actually. So I was really interested in, you know, how just by programming a harmonic code in a stone, this could be happening. Well, I started taking measurements with electromagnetic field meters, and I invented a new type of Tesla coil that has never been invented before. And I have three generators where I treat these stones in my lab. And when I pointed the meter EMF meter at, electromagnetic field meter at my new, basically, Tesla coil. It fried it. Whereas a normal Tesla coil with millions of volts coming off of it, no problem. It utterly destroyed it. So I realized there was a huge amount of energy there. And then what I did is I decided I'm going to measure the energy going into the system versus the energy that the system is actually producing. And where most people fail with their zero-point energy machines in this huge race to zero-point energy technology is they see an increase in voltage and they think, oh, my God, I've got over unity. There's more energy here. But their amperage goes down. The amperage is the amount, the quantity of the punch of an electric current. The voltage is the flow. And basically you take voltage times amperage to equal watts. Or amps times volts equals watts, to know if you really have over unity. And I have all these meters, and I have these harmonic co-generators that are mathematically designed.
In the lab.
In the lab, and this blew my mind and my partners. We saw truly 1.5 amps going in, and my meters only go to 5 amps. It only takes 2 amps to destroy a human body. 5 amps were coming out steadily. And then I went, oh, my God, this explains why this field generator I created is frying my meters. In fact, it fried my volt meters, and I had to remove stuff from the lab because it was so powerful it would destroy it. And the first thing I realized is I have over unity, and the first thing I could do with this as it is I could actually convert water into hydrogen far more efficiently than we currently are with our conversion. Running electricity.
Using this technique.
Using this technique. And that's just the beginning of where all of this goes. But it ends up becoming, this huge mathematical discovery that I start getting more and more into the math, and I'm able to actually find out what the Great Pyramids really are doing and take some measurements on the pyramids, which I think you're going to be really excited about later on. But where this, let me just backtrack a little bit because where this all started for me, and I was very conservative about this. I didn't want to go public with the discovery, and I've been working on differentials for years now. And there's a few other people, that have come to my attention through Dr. Len Horowitz and also my friend Luke Gatto, who's one of my co-researchers,
sure,
that have been kind of going in the same direction. They called it breaking symmetries, and I called it differentials. But I started doing a lot of mathematics, and it's very simple mathematics, and discovering that these differential harmonic codes were not only responsible for, utterly abundant, infinite free energy, and acted as conduits to extract energy out of the zero-point field and pull it into our physical dimension. And what I mean by that is zero-point energy, by definition, is when you measure the actual background of space itself. Max Planck said the void of space in the year 1900, he said this to Einstein, that there was energy there, that the void was actually supercharged with an infinite amount of energy.
How did he know that?
He knew it mathematically because his formula, E equals HF, which was different than Einstein's E equals MC squared.
Okay.
Max Planck, just to make this simple, let me make Einstein really simple for people because once you really understand how simple E equals MC squared is, it won't scare you anymore. It's basically energy is equal to mass in relationship to converting mass from two different forms. One solid mass energy in motion. Imagine electrons or charged particles are flowing through a copper wire the same way water flows down a river. When the water pushes against a paddle, you get a force. Right? That's physical mass energy. But then when you spin in, for example, a Tesla coil, electrons in a copper coil, the coil will radiate off and convert its mass energy into light or electromagnetism. So Einstein's formula is really just a way of quantifying this constant conversion of energy transforming itself from a physical state back into light and then from light back into matter. So that's really what it is.
Why, David, has it taken so long at this point for mm-hmm. anybody else to develop this or come up with this?
This type of technology?
Yeah.
Well, this is what's really interesting, is so many people are moving towards this discovery of zero-point energy, and it really is the holy grail. And one of the reasons it's so hard is that, Tesla did it. He did it with the Earth itself. He actually decoded the Earth's harmonic code. it's just because there's not enough money. There's not enough money and time going into it. There's incredibly brilliant minds out there, and most of the people that I know in this field are just dying to get some research funding so they can do some experiments in the lab. I happened to get a little bit of research funding because I had some partners who wanted me to see if I could charge, you know, stone technology to affect the energy field of the human body. And by accident in the background, you know, I produced an effect of over-unity. And I used some materials and designed a Tesla coil in a way that's never been done before. But, yeah, there are other people that are doing it, but the process of actually testing, is it just the voltage going up? Is it the amps going up and the volts going down? That has to be verified every single time.
That is amazing work, David.
Well, so this is just the beginning. But where it all started for me is my UFO sighting at Berkeley in 1968.
Explain that briefly.
Really quickly, you know, coming home from elementary school, 7 years old, there's a flying saucer up there and hundreds of people, you know, pointing at it in pandemonium. And then it disappears in a blink of an eye 20 minutes later. But over the pursuing weeks, I kept dreaming about the UFO's propulsion system as if they were communicating to me how it worked. And what I saw was one set of lights, green, blue, spinning one way on the same axis, and then orange, yellow, spinning counterclockwise to that rotation on the same axis. And that was part of the secret at 7 years old. And it wasn't until I discovered that Bardeen, Cooper, and Schieffer won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1972 for spinning electron pairs counter-rotational to each other on the same axis, and they produced superconductivity. When I realized that actually, you know, was an actual, you know, mechanical mm-hmm. discovery in the quantum universe, that there really was something to this counter-rotational spin, I knew that there was a purpose for me receiving that information. And it turns out that that is the key to understanding the hidden harmonic codes of the universe.
Now, are you saying, though, that you are at a point now where you can harness the energy from the universe, or you're just dabbling?
Well, I can say that I'm at the point now where I've taken these measurements that I can build a device that is similar to, you think of the zero-point energy field. There's no temperature at all. It's absolute zero. At minus 273 degrees in this void where Max Planck discovered. And Einstein says, no, there's no energy in the void because if there's no mass, there's no energy. And Max Planck said, well, wait a minute. 10 years later, in 1913, Einstein and his partners come forward and realize, yes, the void is where all the energy is in the universe. And what I'm saying is that it's what's amazing about the zero-point field is because the temperature is zero. Why should you have any energy? Because you need heat normally to get energy in some form. So how does that energy of absolute zero actually flow into the physical universe? How do we actually extract it? Well, it turns out that what I've discovered is these mathematical harmonic codes are everywhere. They're all around us. The symbols of what clues us into how to mathematically determine where they are natural architectures, natural sacred geometry. And this is where I started to discover where they were. I took a natural six-sided quartz crystal, and I noticed that it's a hexagon, and you can pick up any one that's natural, that's not man-made or, okay. or not cut. And you'll notice that it's not a perfect hexagon. It's got six sides, but each side is slightly different length and different angles.
David, we'll pick up the story right from there. Plus, after that, I want to talk about the mathematical proof that the Great Pyramid was designed by extraterrestrials. David, I want to spend a lot of time on the pyramids here, but I want you to finish your thoughts right before the break. David Sarita, our special guest, as we talk about harmonic codes and zero-point energy. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, before we get to the pyramids, this is really critical.
Yep.
And what it is that Newton's third law, which we're so, you know, bent on trying to protect, that there's a finite amount of energy in the universe that keeps converting itself from mass into electromagnetism and back to mass, that it's the same amount of energy that always existed. And I've always had a problem with that, especially with the expanding universe model. And essentially, what I discovered is when I was looking at the wavelengths of the counter-rotational spin, interesting enough, of all the subatomic particles, I realized all the wavelengths were different, and that violated Newton's law. And I didn't know why anybody didn't notice this, because I've looked at hundreds and hundreds of particles. Now, note that, you know, going back to my UFO experience in 1968, that I saw the light spinning counter-rotational to each other, and one was a set of blue-green lights, and another counter-rotational was red-orange. Well, it's interesting because blue-green is a shorter wavelength or higher frequency waveform than red, red, orange, or yellow, which are longer waveforms, which means between them, if two waves are spinning against each other, they're competing with each other, which means when they actually fight with each other, they don't cancel out to an equal and opposite. Newton's third law states that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And over, wherever I looked in the quantum universe at the measurements of the every particle that exists in the subatomic universe, from an electron positron to a proton, antiproton, to a muon, antimuon, tau, antitau, on it goes, quarks, antiquarks, they all spin counter-rotational to each other. So this is the key, this counter-rotational spinning, and the differential is the leftover harmonic energy between those spins that I'm actually talking about. So I knew that there was a problem, and I wrote Frank Close, who wrote The Particle Odyssey, and I said, have you noticed this, that the electron positron have different wavelengths, therefore when they compete against each other, they're not equal and opposite, and why do you have all the subatomic particles counterpairs equal and opposite mathematically? And he said, that's just a coincidence. I mean, that's only one photo. So I sent him more and more photos where every single time this was happening, and he went silent. So then I realized that if pairs of waves were vibrating against each other. In fact, you can do a simple experiment right now, or you take your hands and you put them in the heart prayer position in your heart, mm-hmm. and start moving in a circle clockwise with both hands together. That's what happens when two waves are in a synchronicity. But when you rub your hands against each other, you get friction if they're spinning opposite to each other. And in that friction space, you're producing a vibration, sound, energy. That's where the differentials are. So the next thing I did, and this gets into stones, which will then lead into, you know, what are the Great Pyramids and what is the mathematical proof?
And your theories about this one, they're absolutely stunning. Go ahead.
So what I did is I took my six-sided crystal and I measured in centimeters and millimeters, to be very precise, all the sides. And I realized all these sides are different. You know, I had two equal sides at 4 centimeters. Then going clockwise, I had 3.3 centimeters, the next face 3.6, and the next one 4.6, the next 3.7, and then I come back to a 4. And Marcel Vogel, really, you know, I don't know if you know the story of Marcel Vogel, and the computer scientist at IBM who actually built the first hard drive systems at IBM, who became fascinated with crystals. So much so that actually it led to, at Stanford University in 1993, they actually put a movie of the Mona Lisa and a separate movie of a hummingbird flapping its wings in 3D and stored it in a crystal and found that crystals will become the hard drives of the future because they have memory. So, and what Marcel Vogel was doing is he was watching crystals being born in their liquid state going to solid state, and they used invisible wavelength cameras looking into the ultraviolet. They could see the waveforms, imagine like two ocean waves colliding into each other, that were vibrating together that formed the crystal. And then the crystal goes into a solid state, and then you have this frozen piece of silica. And then with that, you can actually understand what created this architecture. And why is it that in sacred geometry, and this is where we're going to turn a page on sacred geometry, and I'm going to reveal something in the Great Pyramid that is utterly miraculous. Why in sacred geometry do we make all of our sides equal? And I realized that all I had to do is do a new type of math, very simple division, which you can really pretty much master by the time you're in grade 10 even, is divide each of the sides into each other to see what their common ratios are, both clockwise and anti-clockwise on the crystal. And if all of the sides of a hexagon or a three-sided triangle are equal, they'll divide into each other one time, and you'll get static energy or energy that can't.
All right, one more time on that one.
Well, if you take, for example, a triangle, very, very simple triangle, and all the sides, the lengths of the sides are exactly the same.
Okay.
If you divide each side into each other, you're always going to get a 1. And that was the problem I had with sacred geometry, because in nature, all the sides are not equal. So I thought, what does that mean? Nature could never be wrong. And when I did the math clockwise versus counterclockwise on the crystal, the numbers it generated on the ratios were, oh, my God. Like, for example, side 1 was 4 divided by 3.3. I got 1.21212121212, like a harmonic repetition, right? And the next side was 3.3 centimeters divided by 3.6. I got 0.91166666666, and I got all these sixes. And on this went, no matter where I took a natural crystal and did the math clockwise and anticlockwise, I got these codes that were repetitive infinities, like 108, 108, 108, 108, and they go forever. And I thought nature produced the waves that produced this crystal were created it with these harmonic codes. So what would happen if I designed a harmonic code generator using those same multiple frequencies in a set together? What would I generate? For example, right now we're talking on a particular frequency on the radio, right? And so what I'm talking about is, you know, that was an evolution in science. First we had, you know, powerful energy waves that we used. We were all obsessed with amplitude, increasing the amplitude, and then it became all about frequencies. But then I realized there's something beyond broadcasting radio wave generators and frequencies. There's something called harmonic sets, and I actually know how to build them with these numbers. So then I come to, okay, I built my harmonic, you know, my first set of harmonic wave generators, and I realized that with these crystals, these numbers that I was generating, doing the math clockwise and anticlockwise, that there was something way beyond pi, you know, the resolution to resolve the circumference of a circle. You take the diameter, the distance across the center of a circle, times this magical formula, 3.141592, and et cetera, and you resolve the circumference. And then you have the golden mean ratio, which is the basis of fractal geometries, for all those people out there who know about the miracle of fractals. And I realized there's way more harmonic codes than pi and phi. In fact, there's thousands of them. And if you know the harmonic code of virtually anything, you could probably create anything you wanted, and even energy itself, if you knew the code. And that is what I believe Tesla did in his famous experiment in Colorado Springs, where he shorts out the entire state. So then I took the Great Pyramid. Oh, my God. This gets really incredible, George. Because we see, firstly, before I show you what actually happens and what I actually discover in the Great Pyramid itself.
Because you've tied this now into ET production.
I can tie it into anti-gravity. I can tie it into energy. I can tie it into how ETs are actually communicating. This is all going to become really clear.
Okay.
And you know, think of it like, you know, the Karate Kid, like wax on, wax off. You know, why are we doing this? It's going to be really simple, folks. So you'll really get this. So this was already well known that when you look at the ratio of the Great Pyramid and its trinity of pyramids at the site at Giza, there are a perfect ratio resemblance of Orion's Belt, the star system.
Right. Though Zahi Hawass would say no.
Yes, but that was not my discovery. I wanted to go deeper, and I thought, you know, there must be something about the pyramids. They're made of limestone, which is silica and minerals, which makes them very conductive as generators. And second, in the core, you have granite, and granite, actually, I've used in my lab, is one of the best stones you can activate with these harmonic codes. So I decided to take, using the original measurement in cubits, the sides of the square. If you're looking straight above the pyramid, it looks like a square, right? And you realize that, you know, once again, I mean, think of man-made sacred geometry in the modern world like all the sides exactly equal. But when I looked at the measurements, the precise measurements of the sides of the Great Pyramid at Giza, I noticed the square was not perfectly square. In fact, the sides were all different. And so I looked at, you know, we have the north face is 439.67 cubits, and the south face was 440.05 cubits. And then the east and west faces were, east was 439.93 cubits, and the west was 439.87 cubits. So why the differential? Why are they not all exactly the same? And I found it out. All I did is I took the, I did the math clockwise and anti-clockwise on the Great Pyramid on those sides, starting with clockwise with the north face at 439.67 cubits divided by the east, which is 439.93 cubits, which equals 0.999. And I went, oh, my God, I know what that number means. I know exactly what that number means because I've done so many calculations, I can kind of refer to it like an index. And then when I did the east-south side, I got 0.999. And then when I did the southwest and the east-north, I got 1. And then way down in the decimal series, you generate all these other numbers. So my ratio is 1 to 0.999. Now, I know that doesn't mean anything to anybody yet, but it's going to mean something so incredible that there's no way that any there's no way that an ancient civilization without access to space technology could know what that number means.
It was done on purpose.
And I'll tell you what it is. Now, the Earth itself was originally thought to be a perfect sphere. And during the time of Archimedes, who was the forefather to Newton, who was the forefather to Einstein, Archimedes was one of the greatest mathematicians of all time. In the 4th century B.C., he comes right after Pythagoras.
Came up with buoyancy and everything else.
Right. And he actually, you know, one of his, basically his inspired students, Eratosthenes, he actually is the first one to determine the circumference of the Earth, not precisely, assuming it's a perfect sphere. And Eratosthenes, I have a hard time pronouncing his name, he basically finds 1 degree on the horizon.
He won't matter, David. I don't think he's with us anymore.
Okay. So he finds 1 degree on the horizon versus, and converts that to Earth distance and multiply by that by 360 degrees, and you come to 24,900 miles roughly. So you think, okay, great. He's resolved that the Earth is a sphere. And he does this in the 3rd century B.C.
And he was right.
And, well, he was not precisely right because the Earth is not a sphere.
It's
a slight egg. And NASA, when they use satellite technology, they find that the circumference pole to pole, north pole to south pole, has a difference actually, I'll give you the actual numbers for the audience because you can actually calculate this. It's the equator circumference is actually 40,075 kilometers, 0.16115308. So it's a really precise number that NASA gave us. And then the pole to pole circumference is 39,946.7014, et cetera. The ratio between those two sides is, guess what it is? 0.9968. It's precisely the same ratio. Harmonic code is the sides on the Great Pyramid.
Now, why do you conclude, though, that mankind couldn't have come up with this on its own?
Well, not without space technology, because even Eratosthenes could not conclude that the Earth was an egg, because
he wouldn't have known. He couldn't have known.
He couldn't have known, because when he takes 1 degree versus in the horizon versus land distance, he's assuming the Earth is a perfect sphere, and even his forefather, Archimedes, realizes that pi actually can't perfectly resolve a circle. There's a huge mystery about a circle in my book, The Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe, and that's something else in itself. But the ratio is 99.7%, 99.8% accurate to the ratio of the Earth circumferences, the two different circumferences, pole to pole. And the problem with this is, mathematically, it would have been impossible, even in the time of even the Italians. I mean, even Da Vinci's time. Even Da Vinci. What's his name? The other Da Vinci.
Well, there's Leonardo, and that is good enough for me.
Leonardo Fibonacci, who developed the Fibonacci sequence, which leads us to the golden mean. That's the first hidden harmonic code that was discovered that was considered, you know, the secret ratio of nature.
All right, but what are you saying about the pyramid? Are you saying that ETs definitely helped in some form or fashion?
Well, what I'm saying is the builders of the pyramid built the sides of the pyramids in a precise ratio that's equal to the hidden harmonic code of Earth itself. And because the Earth is an ellipse, a slight egg. The beauty of an ellipse versus an egg is each location on an ellipse has a precise set of harmonics codes that are going to be very, very precise. So I actually believe the missing 0.03%, 2% difference between the pyramid's harmonic code and the actual Earth is its location on the planet. Now, this gets really interesting because there's no way mathematically that the ancient Egyptians, Zahi Hawa says at least 5,000 years ago, or 3,000 BC when they were made, we know that it took until the time of the Greeks to even get a rough circumference of the Earth, let alone discover that the Earth has two different circumferences and that their ratio is the same as the pyramids. You would have to have access to space technology. And I know Zahi Hawass would be very alarmed by this, and he would have a hard time with it.
Oh, yeah, he'd be fighting you tooth and nail.
But there's no way that they could have known. There's no way you can do this mathematically from the Earth and using a sextant and the stars. There's just no way.
What if they had advanced technology? Not ET technology, but advanced technology.
You still couldn't do it from sitting on the Earth itself.
You had to be up.
You had to actually get satellite and radar data, actually bouncing waves off of the Earth in all the dimensions as it rotated, to get the precise numbers that I used to produce my differential hidden harmonic code. Now, this is where it gets more interesting, because let's see if we can accept that it took extraterrestrial technology to get those dimensions.
Okay, we'll assume that for now.
And that the Earth, that the pyramid itself is sitting on a precise harmonic code as a location. And its harmonic resonance as a harmonic set, three pyramids, is in ratio with Orion's belt. Now, we know that stones act as amazing capacitors, meaning they can hold a huge amount of charge. And with the millions of blocks that are in the Great Pyramid, the amplitude of the charge they would hold would be phenomenal. Well, here's the golden key. I found that if you take a stone capacitor and we actually interfaced it with a conductor metal, beautiful metal windings we have in these pendants, that all of a sudden, and we're not running any more energy into the system, when you put your fingers on it, it vibrates your body to levels that are incredible, right up to the super athlete level, 200 millivolts.
You think that was the purpose of the pyramid?
Well, remember the golden capstone that belongs on the top.
Right.
Now, if I can demonstrate this on a small scale, that as soon as you put that capstone on the pyramid itself, and then you activate it with a form of energy, they become massively powerful harmonic resonators.
And when they do, what does that mean? We'll find out when we come back. And we're with David Sirita. New ebook out, by the way, Differentials and the Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe. We're talking about that tonight. David, the harmonic codes, why were they hidden?
Well, they're hidden basically just from our knowledge. I think I was deeply inspired by Nikola Tesla to find out why there were these precise, what he called stationary waves, that in the Earth itself and all, you know, energetic forms, including the sun and the other planets, that they were kind of like, for example, imagine that, you know, here I am, I'm trying to listen to George Norrie and Sedona, and you're on 780 kilohertz, which is a frequency. But if I go to 782, I just get white noise.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it kind of like that. Now, a harmonic code is something beyond a frequency. It's a set of frequencies in tandem that if you tune into that, instead of I get George Norrie at 780 kilohertz in Sedona, if I tune into this harmonic code, what's going to happen? And so think of if the Earth and actually the positioning of the pyramids at Cairo, Egypt, at Gaza, is a particular harmonic code for that location on the ovaloid shape of the Earth, and that Orion's belt has its own particular harmonic code, which I'll show you in a moment here. Is it possible that if I activated these giant quantum resonators with actual energy from the capstones of the pyramids, would I create a stargate between here and there? Because if I know the code of that location in Orion's belt, will it take me there? And here's where it gets really interesting, because when you do, ratio math is very simple. It's just division. You take one distance and you divide it into the next. and you do it, you know, you do it forward and backwards, and you get numbers, and these numbers represent code. So I measured in a very large scale model from NASA directly above the three pyramids, from the main pyramid, the Great Pyramid, which mm-hmm. is A, to B, the second, you know, Great Pyramid, the second largest one. And I get a ratio of, and then I measure from that to the third, the Little Pyramid. And my ratio is 21 to 22. So you take the number 22 and divide it by 21, and you get 1.0476. So that represents a 1. But when you divide 21 by 22, you get 0.95454545454, which is amazing when you consider the possibilities of all the random kind of numbers you would get. Why am I getting this beautiful harmony? And you know, when you add 5 and 4 together, which are infinites, they turn into 9. So you get this 9 harmonic ratio. What does that mean? Well, what's really amazing about perspectives in the universe, when you look at anything beyond a single point, as soon as you look at 2 points or 3 points, in the case of the pyramids, from any different angle or location, it's going to look different. And those ratios would be different if I was looking at the Great Pyramids from another location, you know, on the horizon. Their ratios would appear different. It's the same when you look at the star system of Orion. The three stars are unique in their ratio distances from each other in a three-dimensional universe versus a flat page, which is only two dimensions. The actual ratio of looking at Orion from Earth is only unique to Earth itself. If you run another planet, it's going to look different. So if you produce a resonator with these giant, giant pieces of stone and you run electricity through this clockwise and counterclockwise from the capstone, I actually believe on the capstone it wasn't just copper. And if you remember some of those images in Egypt of the giant, they look like light bulbs with filaments in them, and the guy's, you know, the ancient Egyptian is holding it.
Yeah.
You remember seeing those?
Absolutely. Incredible.
Incredible. They actually remind me of kind of Tesla-type technology. And it makes me believe they actually had electricity. Well, from the capstone, using gold or copper or any conductor metal, I've done this with small stones because I know this works. The amplification of the energy multiplies by a factor of 10 or 100. It's amazing. So if they did that and they produced a resonance in the exact harmonic code of the Earth itself in the pyramid, the exact location, and the harmonic code of the relationship between looking at Orion's belt from Earth, what would happen? And I can only guess that, knowing, you know, going back to my earlier work on singularity, that if we go to the non-dual place in the universe discovered by physicist Paul Dirac, that if you can go into non-duality, you can move anywhere in the universe in zero time, and then if you produce this code, it will spit you back out in exactly that location instantaneously. And this was confirmed by Paul Dirac, that the singularity, there's no resistance to movement in the singularity. In fact, it explains Einstein's communication through action at a distance.
All right, Dave, I want you to paint me a picture for a moment on mm-hmm. the pyramids. Before mm-hmm. they're constructed, mm-hmm. information passed down from above to, gosh, who knows here. Mm-hmm. But explain the procedure. What do you think happened?
Well, what I think happened when I look at this math is I don't think humans really did this. I don't believe the blocks were lifted, you know, manually, you know, using, you know, rollers. I think what appears to be, from a human perspective, an accident in the square sides. And even the angles have a harmonic code. I've measured all of the harmonic codes on the pyramids. They're mismatched not by accident, just like a natural six-sided crystal is not an accident that the sides are not all equal. And I believe that there's no way they could know the harmonic code of Earth, meaning the differential between, as we described earlier, between pole to pole and equator, unless they were coming from space. And so I believe this builds the strongest mathematical case that they were actually built by extraterrestrials, because we know the math didn't arrive on the scene until the Greeks to even give a rough estimation of the circumference of the Earth. So I actually believe they were made by those extraterrestrials to create a stargate between Earth and that star system. And I've read the entire Tibetan Book of the Dead. And in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, they believe that when the pharaohs were placed in, for example, in the king's chamber and the queen's chamber, they would ride on a boat to Orion. Now, that's really interesting. Ride on a boat to Orion. Now, we could take that to mean, you know, out of body or spiritually. And that, you know, I think there's three possibilities for the pyramids and why they were built. A stargate doesn't necessarily mean moving something physically, but considering Einstein's action at a distance and that mental telepathy has been measured to be instantaneous, not the speed of light on a cell phone, instantaneous, regardless of distance, if you were broadcasting, and I'm actually going to do this, George, I'm actually going to broadcast a message to a particular star system through not a radio station, a harmonic code transmitter.
You're going to be your own SETI, but in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, this is where this conversation is going to get really interesting, because I believe if SETI made receiver antennas in harmonic code ratios to particular star systems, which I can easily, you know, teach in my book, The Hidden Harmonic Code, that teaches you how to do the math on any harmonic code you want to figure out. But imagine instead of broadcasting a frequency, I broadcast the harmonic code of Orion. Am I going to be able to send a message there instantaneously through the singularity? I think yes. And in fact, and now if I build a receiver antenna that's in a harmonic code, and they're all the receivers are working together in tandem, I'm going to be able to receive a message from that particular star system instantaneously through action at a distance, faster than radio. And that has to be tested. Now, whether the pyramids could move a physical object, a pharaoh in a boat, as the Tibetan Book of the Dead says, through that stargate, well, considering the amount of stone and how much energy it's going to produce and the harmonics it's going to produce, I think there's a really good chance a physical object could move through that paradigm.
That would be incredible, David.
It would be incredible, and I'm actually going to be able to test this on a small scale. It's not that expensive to do this, to actually build a harmonic transmitter to a particular star system.
Show us with words what your laboratory consists of.
Well, I mean, because the technology is proprietary, I can give you kind of a picture. I have a completely new, a basic Tesla coil is just copper wire round in a circle on a cylinder. And you can, for example, attach that whole coil to the output of your speakers, for example, your speakers on your stereo system, and you play a song, you'll actually broadcast on a radio wave that song. That's how a radio station works, right? And then in reverse, you can have an antenna that tunes into that particular broadcast frequency and receive the message, right? Well, so that's the traditional Tesla coil.
Right.
The Tesla coil is used usually to broadcast radio waves and eventually microwaves and television. And so my lab, I have developed a new type of Tesla coil that has windings that are so unique.
How big is it?
Well, it's the first one is probably only a foot and a half tall.
Okay. Not too big.
And that's the second one is the one that's so powerful that it shorts out all my meters. I charge my stones in that field, which the stones start to vibrate so intensely. The third coil, I actually broadcast the sound of the sun as recorded by NASA, and we talked about that in one of our last shows on water, and that vibration then sticks into the stones, which is a harmonic code. And I also put in some other really amazing harmonic codes into these stones, and they actually stay there. Now, think of this may sound really crazy because, you know, we know Marcel Vogel said that crystals will become the hard drives of the future, which are stones, and that at Stanford University, they actually stored a movie of the Mona Lisa and a hummingbird, two separate movies in the same little crystal, and they believe these things will be the hard drives of the future. It's not so hard to believe because a DVD is just plastic, and there's a whole movie in there. Or there's a CD that has songs.
I know, it is bizarre, isn't it?
Isn't it bizarre? Plastic has memory. So if plastic has memory and it stays there, it doesn't.
And you could read the memory with a little laser.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting. I know somebody right now, very, very high source, who claims that using lasers, that ancient stones from the Middle East have been scanned, and they're seeing amazing information displaying on the screen.
Oh, really? In the stone?
In the stone itself.
Like a CD or a DVD.
And remember, Zechariah Sitchin says that the round stones with the hole in the middle called maze were like their hard drives. They stored their blueprints and their data and information on it. And now we have CDs which are round with a hole in the middle made of plastic, and we do the same thing. Well, because certain types of stone have chasmary kind of plates, imagine little razor blades really close together, and in between it is stone, you can trap vibrations in there. And there's millions of tiny, tiny flakelets in granite and stones like that. And so there's actual information that you can trap in stone. But when you activate it with a laser, you can retrieve that data. You can actually retrieve it. And that's not so, you know, far-fetched to think. If plastic has memory, then why not, you know, crystal? Why not stone? So, you know, going with that, I mean, this whole thing on differential starts to get more and more amazing, because let's go into just kind of a little detour into anti-gravity, because we think, you know, how could the pyramids, you know, actually teleport a boat, which could be a spaceship, from Earth to Orion instantaneously and not even travel through the fabric of space? Well, going back to my guy at Lockheed, you know, Boyd Bushman, he gives me the secret to anti-gravity according to how Lockheed is doing it. This is really amazing, because he shows me this experiment, which I'll recap really quickly, that he takes, you know, if you take two magnets and you face them north-north or south-south, they push against each other, right? Well, he takes two $5,000 super magnets and he bolts them together. They're in the shape of a donut, so that they're pushing against each other so hard it produces a field. And he wraps that in a plaster to make it look like a rock, and he revisits Galileo, and he drops an ordinary rock next to his north-north magnets off his own leaning tower of Pisa. And according to Galileo and Newton, whether you drop a pin and a hammer together at the same time, they all fall towards gravity at the same speed. Well, Boyd Bushman's north-north magnets fell slower all the nine times that he dropped them. Well, what's interesting is what he does next is Lockheed builds nuclear-powered electromagnets, and they face each other in the same fashion. Well, the way you make an electromagnet, you take a shaft of iron and you wrap copper wire clockwise around a shaft of iron, right? And then you do another one and you wrap it clockwise around the shaft of iron. And when you run electricity through that, you get two poles that are identical. So let's say north-north or south-south, right? But when you spin in your mind in 3D, that clockwise component magnet around behind the other one so they face each other, it looks counterclockwise to the first one's clockwise. Hence, all the way back to my dream about the UFOs, clockwise, anti-clockwise spinning. Well, when he showed me a crane at Lockheed Martin lowering this giant nuclear-powered electromagnet into the belly of a classified aircraft, and it flew using anti-gravity. That was done a long time ago at Lockheed, so we know we have it. Well, what's interesting about that is that when, you know, Lockheed did it, it was very, very primitive. There was a lot of radiation. They got anti-gravity, but it used the counter-rotational spinning of magnetic fields against each other. Now, Boyd Bushman does this other experiment with me where he takes this little thing called a celt or a rattleback, which you can search that on Google. It looks like a little plastic canoe. And when you spin it counterclockwise, it spins really, really smooth and really beautifully, very balanced. When you spin it clockwise, it starts to vibrate, and then it spins back counterclockwise all by itself. And we did this experiment over and over and over again, which proved Newton's third law was violated, that clockwise and anticlockwise in the natural field of gravity were not equal. There was a vibration produced between the two, which is what's called a differential. And that was the secret to anti-gravity. And so now just imagine, take another little detour to crop circles. Because, you know, it was revealed to me by a very profound crop circle researcher, Barbara Lamb, that inside the circles, they found all the weaves in the circles, the real ones, were clockwise and anti-clockwise right on top of each other with slightly different diameters, which means differentials. Everywhere you saw this in the crop circles. So from there, what I did is I did an experiment, an amazing experiment. I started noticing these vortexes spinning counterclockwise in my swimming pool, you know, our community swimming pool, that were like a black shadow on the bottom of a blue pool that had this spiraling, like kind of like a Milky Way galaxy, spinning counterclockwise into the center that was black. And I decided to film it so that I could study the photography. And when I took the photography into my editing bay, this black counter-spinning, it looks like a galaxy spinning in the bottom of my pool, on top of it, a clockwise, bright radial lines were spinning clockwise right on top of the counterclockwise spin. And at 9 o'clock, if you think of a clock at the 9 o'clock position, the clockwise and anti-clockwise waves were producing interference patterns. And when I slowed the frames down and took pictures, this is all in my book, you could actually see this in the interference patterns. All of the geometries known to humanity are there. Cubes, triangles, pyramids, rectangles start to form. And as they form, and you can clearly see them in the differential vibrations between clockwise and anticlockwise, you're realizing, oh my God, this is creation happening right before our eyes. This is how the crop circle's counter-rotational spins, producing a harmonic vibration, produces all these geometries that we're seeing in the crop circles. And not only that, all of the elements on the periodic table have their own actual geometries. For example, even on the quantum level, quarks are hexagons. There's six quarks in a hexagon and six anti-quarks in the opposite hexagon, just like the natural quartz crystal. It's excited. So what I was seeing there, and you can see this, eventually the architectures form a donut or a toroid. And you're seeing this and saying, how are two counter-rotational waves even spinning against each other with slightly different diameters in my swimming pool and producing all of the architectures known to man? And then you start to understand that when you look back at that natural six-sided crystal, which has unequal sides, you realize, oh my God, that was created by two waves that opposed each other to actually manifest this crystal. So if I do the math clockwise and anticlockwise, I will know the harmonic codes that created this crystal.
David, when we come back, let's talk about how you plan to contact ETs. David, a couple days ago I had Seth Shostak on from SETI, and they were telling us how they're working out this new array of telescopes and how they're going to communicate via radio waves. Mm-hmm. You don't think we need radio waves, do you?
Well, actually, we do. A harmonic set generator or transmitter and receiver does use radio waves, but it uses them in harmonic sets as opposed to frequencies. And I actually heard this from a very, very high profile physicist whose name I can't mention, but he actually told me that the hidden harmonic codes in the differentials were kept hidden in secret by physicists. They really know about them, but they don't want to educate mainstream public about them because the military broadcasts using hidden harmonic codes faster than light instantaneous communication already. They're actually already doing this, and that there are free energy devices that are very, very small that I'm producing, like, you know, maybe three times over unity in my first device. But he said they have ones that produce 5,000 times over unity. And this physicist is very, very high profile. They don't want us to know about it because they don't want us to know, for one, where ETs are really broadcasting and transmitting and receiving because literally, they have already mastered this. It's instantaneous. It's not the speed of light. Radio waves transmit at the speed of light, which is too slow at 670 million miles an hour or 186,000 miles a second between star systems. It takes too long. For example, the Pleiades are 440 light years from Earth. So any information that travels in a light wave or a radio wave from that star system would take over 400 years to get here.
And then if we get one back, another 400 years, so 800 years.
Yeah, but if the military knows about this, if very, very high-level programs in our military-industrial complex know where ET is broadcasting and receiving, then the Seth Shostaks of the world and SETI, you know, need to to reorient themselves into this possibility. I mean, Seth has to know about action at a distance. Einstein's action at a distance violates the speed of light limit. It is instantaneous. And in fact, in my upcoming DVD, Quantum Communication, we have all of the research that has been done on mental telepathy in Russia and also by Gary Schwartz at Tucson, and measuring the time delay is absolutely zero on communicating with the mind. So knowing that the mind and the brain is a harmonic set generator, which I can actually demonstrate, and that's probably where, in fact, that's where I know from all of my sources that the hidden harmonic codes are where our highest levels of intelligence are broadcasting and receiving, then what I would say to Seth Stostath is that, look, you know, you guys have been looking in radio waves for decades and decades, and you're finding nothing but white noise. But why not, you know, talk to me. I will show him how to do this. It's really not that hard to build a set of wave generators, which are radio coils, but they're in harmonic sets. You just have to know how to do the math, and the math is actually really simple, which I teach people in the book, you know. And so if we built an array of radio telescopes that are in a harmonic set, I think we might start to see something. And also, you can do smaller scale models just using radio coils in smaller sets to do the same thing. Well, let's detour into crop circles for a moment before we go into how, in which star system I'm actually going to attempt to make contact.
All right, why, is there a significance here with the crop circles?
There really is, because if you understand the counter-rotational spins in all of the circles, and I use Steve and Karen Alexander's photos because they're so clear and beautiful, you can basically do the mathematics and find out how to take that. It's almost like a blueprint, and rebroadcast exactly in that same paradigm back to them, the very beings that created the circle. If you look at the counter-rotational spins in my swimming pool experiment, and you see that those produce geometries and in vibrational patterns that are very resemblant and reminiscent of crop circles, you'll really understand what's going on here. There is a communication in the crop circles, and you have to eliminate all the man-made ones and get to the real ones.
Right. But, you know, all you need is one real one, David.
All you need is one real one, and once you determine that the grass is not stepped on and has the bend, and you have enough evidence to it's real, then it's worth doing the math on, which I can do, and then we can actually build a wave generator in that exact dimension and ratios to send a message. So you can broadcast, for example, your show through a harmonic set wave generator. You don't have to change the actual audio file itself. It's the way you broadcast it. And I believe harmonic set broadcasting and receiving travels through the singularity or Einstein's action at a distance, and it's instantaneous. And that is what I'm hearing from, I mean, I have multiples of PhDs that are reading this book right now, and they're just flipping out over it because they said, this is the real truth. This is really how the universe works. And even if you look at some very obvious differentials, I'll make some really easy for people. For example, we're spinning on the Earth right now at 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, but we're not thrown off, because counter to the throw, the centrifugal force, is the pull of gravity. The two of them compete with each other, and they're not equal. The leftover force is slightly stronger on the pull than the throw. But here's another differential, very, very simple. It's a warm day, no wind, and all of a sudden this cloud comes floating by and it covers the sun. When it covers the sun, wherever that shadow of the cloud is, it gets colder or cooler. In that space, all of a sudden the wind just rushes. It creates wind out of nothing. The differential between the hot and the cold. Now think of dark energy and dark matter, which are a polarity themselves, and that there is a competition between those two. Dark matter produces an attractive force, and dark energy produces negative pressure, right? There's a new study at the University of Lyon in France that's actually calling dark energy and dark matter dark liquid. Because, I mean, this is an amazing paper I just read, that it's actually a fluid. And this fluid, dark, that the whole universe is sitting in.
And it may be protected by it, by the way.
Yeah, just like, for example, water protect. What's really interesting is photons or light move slower through water than they do through air, right?
Yep.
They move slower through air mass just a little bit than they move through space. And you can slow light waves all the way down in an absolute zero Einstein-Boson condensate. So you can manipulate the speed with which light moves. So if the whole universe is a liquid, and Hubble in the far ultraviolet has verified that a lot of dark matter is just invisible or super high frequency hydrogen in the ultraviolet, then we are kind of sitting in a liquid, and that would explain why light travels so slow. But here's where it gets interesting. If dark matter and its opposite, they're not equal, when you compare expansion, the Hubble expanding universe against gravity, gravity is slightly weaker than expansion. So between those two pairs, you don't have an equal and opposite as well. You have a differential vibration between them. So how do you get zero-point energy to move from dark energy and dark matter and make it physical? Well, my paper in differentials discovers mathematically that just like if you rub your two hands together in opposite directions, you create kind of a vortex or a vacuum in the space between them. These differentials are everywhere around us, from the quantum universe to the macro universe, and they're creating kind of a suction, a vortex suction that pulls and converts dark energy and dark matter into visible mass energy, which...
Do you think we can travel this way as well, though, through this?
Exactly. Exactly. Through these harmonic codes, we can travel. And that's, again, what I believe could be happening in the pyramids. Now, of course, you know, I'm very conservative. When you get a theory, you have to test it. And what's fun about having a lab is you can actually do some really fun experiments and see that this is happening. Now, to broadcast a message to the extraterrestrials, it's actually going to be fairly simple for me. I'm picking the Pleiades star system because I believe that's where the ETs were from the UFOs that visited me in 1968. After my experience with that craft, I suddenly, when I played hide-and-go-seek with my friends, I counted to 100 while they're all hiding, looking at that star system and not even knowing why. I've already done the math on that star system, and in its relationship to the observer, in quantum mechanics, there's something called the observer and the observed. That as you're looking at something, you're actually becoming energetically entangled with it. You see, and once you're entangled with something energetically in the quantum universe, and then you separate them at a distance, the communication is instantaneous. So all you have to know is the harmony of whatever you want to look at in the universe, anywhere you want to communicate or go, so that you can entangle yourself with its vibration. And we know, and this is verified over and over again, any entangled system can communicate faster than light instantaneously. So I've done the math on the Pleiades star system, so I know the codes. And what's interesting, in the beginning I thought it was flawed. I thought, there's no way you can do this, David, because in a three-dimensional space, two dimensions is height and width. So it's like a flat sheet of paper. When we look at any star system, we're seeing it kind of like a flat sheet of paper. We don't know if seven stars are together, what their true distances from each other are, because some might be further back and some might be further forward from each other, for example. But then I realized that the observer, you know, Earth, looking at the Pleiades, is a very unique harmonic ratio. No two places in the universe, when they look at the Pleiades, will ever see the exact ratio of the way those stars appear as we do. So if I send a harmonic vibration through my harmonic set radio coils in the exact harmonic code of the Pleiades star system, basically the singularity knows that there's only two mathematical places in the entire universe where the observer and the observed have that exact harmonic code, and that would be Earth looking at the Pleiades.
Good job, David.
Yeah.
Good job. I mean, this is the work of a physicist, my friend.
Well, years and years and years of, you know, staring at the wall in meditation and then watching, you know, photographs of the way particles move, all going back to my dream about the UFO, the counter-rotational fields, it turns out it's everywhere in nature, and that is the key to everything. You know, we look at the anti-gravity experiment, again, by Boyd Bushman, when you spin this little thing on the table, it the clockwise and anti-clockwise have different laws of energy. They're not equal. And between them, you get an actual vibrational pattern, which is very clear in the experiment. So we know that anti-gravity would be decoded by knowing what that code is. And that's what I think these craft have done. Now, even further, and I presented this at the Waffle and UFO conference, I took photographs.
Just about a week or so ago, right?
Just over a week ago.
Yeah.
When I lectured on differentials to 600 people and, you know, got a standing ovation, which was great, at the very end, I took photographs of UFOs, and some of which, because some of these UFOs from video frames shot by Jeff Willis in Phoenix, you could see through the UFO because the UFO was producing a lot of X-rays. And to the camera, it became translucent. I could see the Tesla coils inside, and I could do the math and determine their harmonic codes. And when I did the math and I found I didn't get random crazy numbers, I got beautiful harmonic codes, I knew it was real. And then I also knew that over and over and over again with real photography of UFOs, you can see the indentations of the actual Tesla coils. And their because you can see all their diameters, you can determine, and anyone who reads my book will know how to do this, you can determine their harmonic codes. And when you see beautiful, absolutely beautiful infinity repeating numbers over and over again, you know you're looking at the real thing. You know that that's how they've been doing it all along. They have been building harmonic code generators that are in sets of twos and threes and so on.
Well, you may pass them all up, David.
Well, it's going to be the real fun comes in, you know, in actually, you know, building the experiments. So, you know, that's where this is all going next.
Let's talk a little bit about stones in the moment we have before we go to calls next hour.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, you talked about how they have an ability like a capacitor to keep, you know, almost like CDs and DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
Why has science not investigated this? Why? I guess they look at these things as rocks, right?
Right. Well, it's really amazing that not very many people know that our bodies, you know, have electricity. We have positive and negative ions flowing through our nervous system. And why not a rock? I mean, the native Indians called the stones the history keepers, the energy keepers. We go back to Stonehenge, and in fact, Smithsonian Magazine last fall published an article that they found the skeletal remains of all these, you know, very sick and disabled people, realizing that they came to the stones to be healed by them. You know, how could a stone hold a healing vibration? And then you go back to the pyramids, and you go back to the philosopher's stone in alchemy, and you go back to the Bible, and you see the use. In fact, when you read the Book of Revelation, you'll see the use of all of the sacred stones in there. And then you go to Islam, and you see the Kaaba in the big black tent. You know, just a black stone. Why is a stone so powerful? And the Tibetans actually stored profound spiritual vibrations in stone statues of Buddhas so beautifully that apparently if you touch one of these absolutely energized stone statues of a Buddha, you will have a spiritual experience. It will transmit energy directly into your body. And I know people who have had this experience. I mean, not just any Buddha statue, you know, very, very special ones. And so how is this possible? Well, it's scientifically, you know, very, and thanks to John Hutchison, who really helped me see this, and my friend Luke Gatto, I could see that, oh, my God, you know, they have these Casimir plates in them, and the Casimir plates also produce differential harmonic codes, and that it's so easy to understand how they can store a charge.
Do you think that Edward Leete Scanlon down there in Coral Castle in Florida during his day used something like this to move those huge chunks of rock when he built Coral Castle?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that whatever kind of quantum generator he used, whether it was sonic or static, there's no doubt that if you vibrate stones with the correct code, they'll become as light as feathers. And
you just kind of like push them along.
Yeah, I mean, we
float
even,
them, I guess, right?
Exactly. Or they just literally they'll just float. Now here's a, you know, someone was at the UFO Congress. I should probably find his name here really quick.
You'll have time during the top of the hour. David, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah.
You're on the air, David.
Yeah, well, it was Joshua P. Warren who did the experiment.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, he got this sample that was supposed to be from the flying saucer at the Plains of
St.
Augustine. Yes,
he was telling us about that.
Right, and they used simple Van de Graaff static energy on this sample, and you can see this on YouTube. And this very, you know, strange-looking piece of aluminum-like metal all of a sudden stands up at its end and starts spinning clockwise. And I already know that clockwise is anti-gravity, and gravity is pulling in clockwise in the differential wave patterns. And this thing is just spinning clockwise, and a normal piece of aluminum doesn't do anything. Yet this little sample is behaving like this. Now, what happened? All we're using is static electricity, and this particular little, you know, proprietary piece of material, which I have one myself in my own possession, which I haven't tested yet, but I'm going to do a whole bunch of tests with my quantum energy generator.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back, David. Plus, it's time for phone calls with you. David Cerrito, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, David Cerrito, our guest. Your phone calls before we go to the calls. David, talk a little bit more about that aluminum-type material that Joshua P. Warren had at that conference.
Yeah, the sample comes from Chuck Wade, and he digs it up and near the Plains of St. Augustine crash near Roswell. And he gets the sample tested, and it's kind of an aluminum silica, which is interesting because a sapphire is an aluminum silica. And it doesn't behave like ordinary aluminum in the field of, in fact, on YouTube, it's UFO Crash Debris Magic Wand Effect in Electrostatic Field by Joshua P. Warren, whom we both know. And what's interesting is this sample was, you know, sitting in an aluminum pie plate on top of a Van de Graaff generator. And what interests me about it is that it stands up so it becomes much lighter in gravity's field, and it spins clockwise, which is interesting because photons bounce off the Earth and they spin clockwise. They're affected a little bit by gravity, but photons, you know, escape gravity. Light bounces off the Earth and goes out into space, and gravity's not stopping it and holding it on the ground. So when we look at the idea that an aluminum silica type of a metal, and Boyd Bushman told me at Lockheed that aluminum, when strobed with certain waves, opens up the anti-gravity force, and there are at least 15 or 20 different grades of aluminum that I've tested here in Sedona with a partner here recently. And we see this aluminum pie plate is not being affected, but this piece of aluminum silica type metal, allegedly from a spacecraft, stands up, spins clockwise, and is about to become anti-gravitic. And I believe one of the conductors of the experiment pulls out a little wand above it once it's been spinning for a while, and it just jumps up. And so now go back to your stones at the Coral Castle and think, okay, if we vibrate them with this positive or clockwise energy, and they become lighter, so much lighter so that just a little wand, you know, a conductor wand, just immediately it leaps. It escapes gravity.
Mm-hmm,
it's a piece
exactly.
of metal. And that we're vibrating it with a particular set of waves, and this is happening. Oh, my God, I mean, this is it right here. This is a small sample of how these craft are really working. They're simply being vibrated they're using a type of metal that responds really well to the vibrational patterns. And we're counteracting gravity. So I think it's very exciting.
Okay, let's go to the phones. David Cerrito, our special guest. We'll go to South Lake Tahoe in California. Zenimu, west of the Rockies, you're up with us. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yeah, you got it, George.
All right.
My question was for David. If he knows of any stones or sacred shapes that can create or induce people to have synthanasia?
With a high sense of what?
If there's like a stone or like a shape that would like create the sound harmonic that would induce people to have synthanasia.
You mean synesthesia?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
There you go.
I never
okay.
talk about these things. George is the only one that understands.
Well, synesthesia is the crossing of the senses. So if you taste something, you'll see color. Or if you hear something, it'll produce a picture. So it's kind of, you know, some people consider it a form of mental illness, actually, that the senses cross over. So
And don't forget, David, tomorrow in Zenimu, we've got Shelley Carr on, who's also an expert in these stones.
Right, and I hope to archive that show and listen to
sure
it.
Sure thing.
But, you know, stones in their natural state have a certain amount of capacitance. They have a certain amount of energy. But it's way different when you vibrate a stone with a particular harmonic code. It totally changes it. It's no longer the same thing. And there's many ways to do that. I mean, using sound waves, it would take you probably 100 years to really change a stone. And when these Buddhist monks and, you know, Christian monks were praying in front of stone statues and inciting mantras for years and years and years in prayers, eventually the stone, you know, transforms. But, you know, you really have to use literally quantum generators to transform a stone. But stones, different types of stones, have certain properties that are very unique to each type of stone. But I've never heard of a stone that could induce synesthesia.
Okay, thank you.
All right, but definitely check in tomorrow, too. We'll see what Shelley has to say. George in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, we go. Hi, George.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hi, I'd like to tell David a little story about what I believe I saw, which I think was the Merkaba. It was about 2 years ago. I was looking out the window, and I saw this bright blue flash in the sky, and then a white light manifested below it, and it was all behind these clouds. And once the white light started to pulse and get brighter, the blue flashes changed to red, then blue, and they increased in frequency, and the white light started to pulsate and counter-rotate. And just from watching this experience for about 30 seconds, I started just looking for information about what I saw ever since that moment. And the thing that matched what I saw the most was something called the Merkaba, you know, mind, body, and spirit. And all the information, what he is saying is true. And I think sacred geometry is proof of it. And I'll hang up and listen to your
call. All right. Go ahead, David.
Well, firstly, what I'm saying about sacred geometry is the man-made sacred geometries are wrong. They'll never give us the hidden harmonic code. We have to look at natural ones and do the counter-rotational math. But as far as what you saw, it's incredible. You saw, you know, I mean, I go back to my UFO in Berkeley, and I saw one set of lights, blue, green going, let's say, clockwise, and red-orange going counterclockwise. And because red-orange is a longer wavelength than blue-green, which is shorter, between them, you get a differential harmonic vibration. They're not equal and opposite. You saw the same thing. You saw a blue light and a white light at the bottom. White contains all of the colors. So when you match all of the colors against blue, when they compete against each other, you're going to get a differential. And it's interesting that the caller is describing the counter-rotational spin once again. This is so common in UFO cases. In fact, I interviewed a bunch of kids on the street one day on my video camera who were in the eye of Hurricane Katrina. They saw a UFO, and it came down above the houses, and they said they saw one set of lights going clockwise and anticlockwise. They kind of drew it with their hands, and I said, oh, my God, I know what that means. And you'll see this over and over and over again. So it's showing more and more evidence. But what has not been known is the differential between them is actually a precise harmonic code, and you have to tune in to those precise codes to get the desired result. Just like if you're not listening to the proper radio frequency on the radio, you're not going to hear this show tonight, and you have to tune into that. So precise codes produce precise results. In fact, these codes get so advanced. If we look at this, is a really amazing story, but it's documented in the Bible that in the Bible book of John, where the disciples are, you know, they're gloomy, they can't catch any fish, and they want to feed the masses. And then Jesus says, you know, have faith, and he casts the net into the water, and they catch 153 fish. I'm trying to get the exact number because I have it in my book here. But anyway, the number of fish that he catches just happens to be their harmonic ratio of, guess what, a vesica Pisces. And a vesica Pisces is the shape of a fish. So the ratio of a vesica Pisces is 265 to 153. And Jesus catches 153 fish in the Gospel of John 21:11. So what he's actually telling us is the mathematical code for creation and manifestation versus the law of attraction. He's saying that, in fact, in the Vedas in India, they believe that there is a very precise language, which is harmonics, vibrations. you have to have opposing waves to produce sound vibration. And in particular languages, you can actually manifest, I mean, these yogis in India could manifest food right in front of them. A palace would actually appear, manifest, out of nothing, just materializing. Like the Sai Baba can just materialize things right out of his hands. And you think, how does he do that? Well, Jesus is telling us, that, well, how could Jesus have spoke 2,000 years ago in a mathematical language of 153 fish, when we know that that is the rate part of the ratio of the actual shape of a fish, which is a Vesica Pisces. I mean, he's literally giving us the secret to the code of creation, of manifestation. So I think it's really amazing to see an example like that.
All right, next up, Earl in Cleveland, first-time caller. Hey, Earl.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hello to both of you, George and David. I've been listening for about 9 months now. And there's been so much on your program, it's been amazing to me. When I was very young, before I turned 5 years old, I used to see shadow people. They played cards in my kitchen. And whenever I got my parents to come and see them, they would always disappear. And I never looked at them as being demonic or anything. But I've seen UFOs. I even saw the mothership once and called NASA because I wanted to know somebody had to see this.
Did they talk with you?
I called the pilot that was on standby, and they said, no, we don't have any records of any of this.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, this was on a bright Sunday morning about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I even saw a UFO right around the Mormon church on the freeway Sunday afternoon about 1 o'clock, and I saw this UFO that was a silver dome that had, like, green emerald-type jewels around it. Now, what's significant about this is in the 70s, I developed a perpetual motion machine. I was using magnets. I figured if I put them at lines tangent and started it and had this armature to spin and place these magnets in the right place, it would continue to spin.
That's brilliant. That's exactly what Ed Lead Skaldin did down at Coral Castle when he was trying to move that. He was coming. Oh, was it really?
My teacher talked me out of it, told me I couldn't get something out of nothing. I said, well, I'm getting something out of the magnet. Later, I don't remember. It might be the same person you're talking about. Some years later, I read about a guy at NASA in general popular mechanics that had developed this same type of generator. And I'm surprised that I haven't heard anything about them using this to produce electricity. But anyhow, I had different thoughts about new sources of energy, because I think the combustion energy is just so obsolete that if I took two different types of crystals, put them in a geodesic type of dome like Buckminster Fuller invented, and had them spinning in a gyro type of way, that I would be able to, number one, defy gravity, and number two, be able to go into other dimensions. Now, this might sound strange. I noticed that if you can turn right angles quick enough, that I believe that you can see into other dimensions.
Earl, I got to tell you something. We've got a physicist that comes on the program. He's working on a time machine. His name's Ronald Mallett.
Okay.
He speaks exactly like you. He's been talking about right angles. And amazing. We're going to get him back on again. You've got to listen to that show.
I definitely will. And see, when David mentioned about that 9 o'clock aspect, that took me right back to that right angle once again. So my next thought was, why do I have to have two different domes spinning? What if I can place these stones in the right place and run current in opposite directions and make it the moving force as opposed to an actual physical cave?
Let's get David's reaction to all of this.
Well, I think it's rather brilliant. I think that, you know, and I've already experienced this, if you can have magnets that are, and again, don't put them in equal sacred geometries, because they'll all cancel out to one. You'll get static energy. Like, if two waves the exact same wavelength and force hit each other, they cancel each other out to a zero, and they don't open up the hidden harmonic codes. But if you take a natural six-sided quartz crystal, which you'll see in my book, you'll actually see how to do the mathematics of this and arrange your magnets in a natural counter-rotational six-sided geometry, and then see what happens. You'll see something, you know, you want to tap into the natural harmonic codes of the universe, and they're really there. But in between the harmonic codes is just white noise, static, a static universe, which means everything is canceling each other out. So if you see this, you know, properly, you will be able to tune into one of those codes, just like you tune into a particular radio station. But in addition to, you know, your right angle turn theory, you know, I have also in the same book, and I've shown this, the wave within the wave. If you look in a spiraling, spinning, you know, subatomic particle wave, that spiral wave has another wave spinning 90 degrees away from forward propagation within it. And I've actually seen this in bubble chamber photographs. You'll see a muon, which has a lot of weight, a lot of mass, you know, and it's spinning. And as it gets into a higher frequency orbit, it all of a sudden loses most of its mass, converts into electron, and turns 90 degrees away from forward instantaneously. And you can actually see this is all in the book. So I'm really, really fascinated by the caller.
Do you believe time travel will be possible in the future?
Well, I think there is time dilation, and indefinitely time travel is possible. You know, going forward in time seems more possible to me than going backwards in time. But also, if you consider, you know, Richard Feynman's sum over history, that every possible history for George Norrie's wife exists in my life and everybody's life, but you made certain choices that made you, you know, experience
right.
one of those possibilities, that all of the possibilities exist. The problem with going forward and backward in time is you're going to end up finding out every single possible decision you might have made or didn't make actually exists. So it gets really confusing.
Let's go to Bob in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hey, pretty good. Oh, this is sort of weird, it's like deja vu. Last time I called Sarita, I was talking to Sarita, and I told him, I said, whoever figures this out, what I'm going to bring up, will get the Nobel Prize.
I remember that. Yeah.
He just verbatim said everything I told him. I told him, I said, someone's going to figure out that the pyramids were put on this Earth and Mars, fixed to a chakra point on Earth that set a resonance characteristics on Earth, which creates a resonant harmonic, because all the planets without it have an eye where there's a storm on it, and they put these on Venus, Mars, and Earth so there could be life on it, because without it there'd be that eye there creating havoc and the storms and all sorts of havoc. But Sarita's getting real close, is pulling in. And another ironic thing, couple weeks before Linda Melton Howell went on the air, I told her that I said, Linda, investigate, look at the movie production crews. They're actually people in the intelligence community that are seeding the TV crews and movies in order to watch information. And then 2 weeks later, she came back with a show. That's exactly what I told her. So it's really funny. It's
perceptive,
sort of weird.
Perceptive. David, you're on.
Yeah. Well, you know, thanks for the feedback. I mean, it's over and over and over again, yes, I believe the exact every location on a sphere would have a perfect sphere would have the exact same harmonic code. But because you're sitting on an egg, a slight egg-shaped Earth, and as soon as you see an ellipse, it means that it is actually a Vesica Pisces shape formed by two counter-rotational waves, NASA has actually determined this. We see the counter-rotational waves that are spinning around the semi-spheroid of the Earth. But what's amazing is time and time again, when you understand that every location in the universe has its own harmonic code vibration, and that when two different harmonic codes of different locations in the universe come into harmony with each other, they're an instantaneous communication with each other, and we know that's how it works in the quantum universe. So yes, this is probably what the pyramids were used for. I've even also, George, taken, if you remember the last show we did on water, where we took the sound of the sun from NASA as recorded in space and beamed it at water, and Leonid Izvikov in Russia takes the Emoto-style photograph, flash-freezing the waves in the water when the sound of the sun was exposed to it, and we get this phenomenal, the most astounding architecture. And I did the harmonic codes on that water crystal, and oh my God, the numbers were so beautiful. They're in the same ratio as one part oxygen, two parts hydrogen. And not only that, I believe if you generated that harmonic code, you would either make it rain or it's gonna produce water.
Back with Final Calls with David Sirita in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, where David Sirita will take your phone calls as well. David, of everything you've worked on in this area, and which is pretty darn remarkable, I'll tell you, what area fascinates you the most? My concern with zero-point energy, it's also zero-point dollars. How do they make money doing this?
Well, firstly, I think anti-gravity is one of my most areas that I'm the most fascinated by. And, in fact, when I mentioned the Boyd-Bushman experiment from Lockheed Martin of the opposing field magnets, you know, how they were dropped and they fall slower, I've just got an email that William Alec, who's local to me here in Sedona, redid the experiment with positive results. It happened. And he's convinced that, remember the Nazi Bell device worked the same way, the counter-rotational spinning fields? Because of he's visited the experiment of Boyd-Bushman and got the same results, he's writing, I'm very excited, positive results. He definitely knows that the Nazi Bell was real. This excites me because when you get confirmation over and over and over again that if you do this experiment this way, you're going to get the same results. But I believe it's not just the counter-rotating fields slamming against each other. If the differential between them is in a harmonic, it'll do a lot more than just anti-gravity. So my whole fascination with UFOs is, it's funny because I'm almost more fascinated how we can advance in aviation and space technology than I am of, you know, meeting the extraterrestrials and finding out who they are and chatting with them. I just want to be able to do this ourselves. So, and William Alec is an associate of John Hutchison, so this is very exciting news that just came in because Bill was attending the UFO Congress where I showed the differential theory in the Boyd-Bushman experiment. So we have confirmation. It really works. This is so exciting.
Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to who's up next. Kentucky we go. Christopher, east of the Rockies. Hi, Christopher.
Yes, hello, George.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to speak with both of you tonight. I have a question for David. As far as Tesla's work, if he had advanced even further with the death ray, which it turned out that it didn't work very well to the public, and it was more or less abolished. But as far as if he took it the next step with harmonics, it could be a potential death ray, couldn't it?
Well, to tell you the truth, I know for a fact that the death ray became ultra-classified and did work. And according to Boyd-Bushman, it was the weapon used to shoot down the Roswell flying saucer, and he testifies to that. The death ray, according to Tesla and the FBI released files under FOIA, could melt an aircraft engine from 200 miles away. And in those FBI files, there's a story of a United Airlines pilot in San Francisco who encountered static coming over his whole airplane with passengers, and it just dropped out of the sky and into the bay. And unfortunately, it's a very horrible story because it shows that the early explorers of the death ray did not even believe it would work, and they probably pointed it in any old airplane, and it caused a very devastating result. So we know that it worked, and now they're much further on that most highly secure weapon. And I've had that confirmed, but I don't really like talking about it that much.
Could I answer one more answer to a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. As far as the harmonics and everything, it can reach, well, most any frequency, if you want to say, to disrupt the molecular structure of any material.
Well, I mean, you're talking about destructive forces. I mean, the harmonic codes are precisely that. Harmonies wouldn't destroy anything, but a disharmony could definitely do a lot of damage. I mean, once you know the harmonic code of something, you could figure out, you know, the disharmony that could cause a lot of chaos. But, you know, these things are you know, already being done, and I believe there are ET races that use these kind of weapons, and we have them. And it's kind of a Star Wars, event that's occurring. And I've hypothesized that what if ETs have their eyes on Earth and they see that we're destroying the planet and they're going to fight each other over who gets it next? You know, I don't know. But those things, you know, destructive forces don't interest me that much. I'm more interested in the positive side of all this.
Didn't Reich believe that orgon was much like what you've been talking about in the universe, and he wanted to be able to pull that down for energy as well?
Well, yeah, Reich, I mean, we know our friend Trevor James Constable used the Reichian tube generators to make it rain, and after a severe drought in Asia for months and months and months, he flew an airplane with the Reichian tubes, and it poured buckets of rain. So, you know, once again, as I was saying earlier, that water has a particular harmonic code. And the difference between a frequency, this is beyond frequency. This is a harmonic code is a set of two or three or more frequencies that relate to each other in a perfect harmony as opposed to a disharmony. So you think of like music. You know, music is multiple frequencies blending together to produce a symphony or the Beatles. And then, you could have a really, you know, bad-sounding band. And it's really interesting, you know, when Masaru Emoto did his experiments with water, and you would see, you know, bad sound vibrations would produce chaos in the architecture of water, but harmonious sounds, you know, and the sound of the sun is the ultimate harmony, restructures water and the beauty and symmetry of the crystalline structures is beyond anything, you know, I've ever seen.
Good point.
So that's the point, that chaotic waveforms would disrupt, you know, systems.
Let's go to Cokeville, Wyoming, west of the Rockies. Jim, you're on with David Cerita.
All right, well, thank you. Thank you, George. I appreciate your show, and I really love what you do. It kind of makes my night every night.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, here just a while back, I've emailed you and also Linda Howe and about this object that I've seen and whatnot. And I had a question for David. You know, as far as your observation of UFOs and your theory of counter rotation. Now, do you consider that a counter rotation of 180 degrees one way and 180 degrees the other, or is it a 360 back and forth?
Well, it's 360, but they're not the same diameter. The counter-rotational waves, and the difference between their diameters, again, can't just be any old difference. It has to be in a harmonic code. If it's not, it will probably not do very much. So you think of the Nazi bell and the counter-rotational fields, and you think of, you know, Boyd Bushman's counter-rotational spinning electromagnets that produced anti-gravity. It has to be in code, and it's not that hard to figure out the codes.
Okay, that was my main question, because I was I've kind of put it through my mind a couple times, and you know, either one of them made sense, you know, other than the old round and round theory, you know, the circular thing, and because you know we don't know, you know, we know that doesn't fly unless it's hurled, mm-hmm. So that was my main question, and. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
All right, let's go next to Tia in Boise, Idaho, on our wild card line. Hi, Tia.
Hi, thanks.
Sure
this
thing.
A great show, you guys. It's a wonderful show.
He's a genius, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. It's really incredible. It's just like opening up your mind to all sorts of things. But listen, the thing I wanted to first, I wanted to make a statement and then just a real quick question. Everything that I touch, if I wear watches, you know, they'll quit working. Clocks in my home quit working. Touched my television the other night and I blew it out. It quit working. you know, all sorts of things like that. Computers, they'll stop working when I get near them. I don't really know why that happens, but does what you're talking about affect humans? And if so, kind of how and maybe what would some of that be?
Well, first thing, a person like you, I mean, I had that happen to an earlier, you know, girlfriend I had when I was really young. She would destroy all kinds of electrical equipment. First thing I would do is I would test your body voltage on the surface of your fingertips to see, you know, how much current you have in your body. But also, you know, some people just seem to produce certain fields that just seem to disrupt electrical equipment. But one thing it tells you for sure, we are electrical, and at the HeartMath Institute, they've actually measured that the heart produces an electromagnetic field that can be measured 3 feet away from the human body. And the heart field is much stronger than the brain. In fact, it's apparently 60 times stronger. So when you consider that, it might, and you consider that all of the satellites, all of the radio broadcasts, all of it is electromagnetism, and that heart disease has increased since we've had more and more of these hundreds of satellites broadcasting all day long, your heart field might be interacting with the magnetic fields of these instruments and just disrupting them because they're out of phase with each other. They're kind of producing chaos against each other. That would be my best guess, but you would have to be tested.
Okay, next up, John in Los Angeles on our wild card line. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. Is it David?
David, it is.
I was curious to know if he's familiar with the writings of Terence McKenna and when he's spoken about the South American shamans that have magical songs called Icaros, and that the beings encountered in the DMT state literally sing objects into existence.
Yeah, no, that's right. I'm sure he's familiar with Terence McKenna. What about the work, David?
Well, I know when I had the experience of, you know, many years ago in 1987 of traveling through, you know, seven dimensions of heaven, I heard the angels singing louder than any sound on the human earth. The sounds were causing vortexes which cause the galaxies to spin and the planets to spin. And these sound vibrations were the key. The language of the universe is literally the language of creation, and I fully believe that is happening. So the question is there a precise language that the universe responds to? And yes, the language is called, see, to get sound, you need a differential. For example, take your hands together and make a circle in the same direction, but as soon as one of the hands spins the opposite way, you get friction and your hand produces a sound. That's how differentials work. Counter-rotational waves to each other produce vibrations of sound, and if they're in particular harmonies, which is language, you get a particular result.
Let's go to first-time caller in Oklahoma City. Don, you're on with David Sarita.
Hi, George. Hi, David. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good.
David, I wondered if you were familiar at all with Robert Temple's book, The Serious Mystery.
He's been on the show, too, as well.
Right. If you could maybe elaborate a little bit, you know, his theory in that book that had been visited by beings from the Sirius star system, and he talked about his belief that our sun and I believe it was Sirius B star had a harmonic resonance that were like in tune with each other and that allowed star travel instantaneously between the two systems, and it was part of an actual larger system.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up because I'm a big fan of his book, and there's a lot of incredible math, and you're right. Our sun is so closely related in its energy dynamics to one of the Sirius stars, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, that he believed that the harmony was so deep that our two star systems were inexorably linked and that instantaneous communication or travel between them was possible. And this is what a stargate really is. And there's, for some reason, we are linked to that system. And if you look below Orion's belt, you'll see Sirius. And in Egypt, where the site where the pyramids were built, we see the connection between Orion and also Sirius with those civilizations. So there might have been stargates to both of those systems.
It is a remarkable system, too, David, isn't it?
It's, I mean, Sirius, I've been incredibly fascinated by it. I've had a lot of experiences, direct experiences with it myself. So it's amazing, amazing what the caller brought up. Yeah, absolutely. I've read his whole book.
Back to L.A. again. Helena, wildcard line. Hi there.
Hi. Hi, George. We met again at the Conscious Life.
Conscious Life. You're the Helena.
Right.
You're the one. Okay,
right.
Great.
And
good to talk with you again.
Yes. And I said, gee, why don't we – I haven't heard anything said about Sai Baba. And tonight your speaker did mention Sai Baba. And he also mentioned Marcel Vogel.
Yes.
Whom I had the opportunity to befriend in the early 80s. At that time, I was really – considered myself a UFO contactee, and I used to visit him at his home and brought other contactees over, and I witnessed him working with crystals and doing healings on people. He was even training, this is Marcel Vogel, he was training doctors to do healings with crystals. And he did a surgical healing with a crystal on a friend of mine, too. And I wanted to say that I've witnessed Sai Baba do many, many miracles. I've made 18 trips to India myself, and it's true that he does materializations of objects. And right there in front of you or at a distance, I showed George at the dinner a photo with some Amrita, which is like nectar of the gods, that had materialized in my apartment. So I didn't think I would get on at all, but I just wanted to say that all that is true. And
okay, and we only got about a minute or so left here, David. First of all, give us your websites, Mr. Sarita.
So my website is voiceentertainment.net, where you can get my book, Differentials, The Hidden Harmonics.
Is that a new website?
It's fairly new. I mean, you know, it's where we had the voice in the film Water. And also, my new film, Quantum Communication, which we could do a whole show about, is coming out at the end of April. And, our toll-free number is 1-877-476-9191. Tomorrow, you know, we take contacts that way, too. So, and also those stones, the stone pendants, I'm going to send you one, George, that raises your actual body vibration.
I'll test it.
Yeah, you can test it. I'll show you how to test it, and I'll send you a little ebook that shows you.
What will happen to me?
Well, one of the things we did at the conference at Laughlin is this guy had an aura camera.
And we got 30 seconds.
And the aura changes dramatically when people wear the stone. Instantly it changes. So great to be with you, George. Thanks for having me on your show.
Always a pleasure, David. David Sarita. He, like David Wilcock, has an incredible mind, does he not? Absolutely incredible mind. Well, our next Coast to Coast show, don't forget, it will be our Friday night into Saturday morning, Friday the 13th, open lines. That's always kind of a special night for us, isn't it? For Dave Caprita, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.